I read a lot of books when I was in prison, and I knew that social enterprises were growing really fast, and they've become very prominent, like, in the economy. Now, it's not just about having corporations. So I was like, this can be a social enterprise where, you know, I'm hiring the formerly incarcerated and addressing a social issue. And so I started reading books all about that and wrote letters to the authors of those books. I started building a mentor network.
From Crossroads Media, this is See Here Love with Melinda Esterbrooks, Season 10, Episode number 26.
Well, welcome back to See Here Love. I'm your host, Melinda Esterbrooks. I'm so glad that you've joined us for another episode of our SOS Summer of Strength series, podcast series. And wow, I'm so excited for today, friends, because in the house, I have Emily O'Brien. She's an entrepreneur. She is fire. She is light. Yeah. She is the founder and CEO of Comeback Snacks. And that's a story that we're going to hear. And she was incarcerated in federal prison here in Canada, and we're going to hear that story as well. But I know for those who are entrepreneurs, who know about what it means to live in second chances or need a second chance, this conversation is for you. So excited, and welcome, Emily, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Okay, let's just get started. I love story. I know you grew up just pretty close from the studio that we're in right now. So I'd like to hear about your growing up and the decisions, good and bad, that you made. And I say this because I did it too. And sort of just what led to all of this that you are now doing.
Yeah, I grew up in Westdale. So my mom and dad were great, you know, great parents. I was always enrolled in summer camps and activities, always kept busy. You know, I had a lot of energy. I was always very curious. I spent a lot of time at the library. I'm the middle child of two, so you can say what you want there.
But, middle children, yeah.
I'm close with my sisters. You know, as you go through different parts of your life, you become distant sometimes. But we're all super close now because we're all adults. So, I went to Catholic school. Catholic elementary school. And then, so we went to church a lot every Sunday. And we got Timbits if we behaved.
We got Swiss Chalet.
Oh my God, I got burned. and then went to Catholic high school, but that's when I kind of started getting into trouble. So I was pretty quiet. I was a pretty quiet kid, so I just didn't know how to socialize, and I ended up just drinking,
really?
Cause
you
smoking
don't seem,
weed.
Yeah, you don't seem quiet now.
Well, now,
but
yeah.
Okay, but before you were really like introverted, quiet?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
I always just felt like very awkward. I always felt like I was just so awkward.
Okay.
I had a bowl cut. That's probably why.
You had a bowl cut in high school?
No.
Okay, no. You mean like... That's where I realized that something could have been wrong.
Oh, my God.
Okay, no. You had a bowl cut when you were like little.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like that's why I think I was very awkward as a child.
Okay. Got it.
Anyway, so I didn't really have like... I had like maybe two close friends, but... Anyway, so I spent a lot of time in the library listening to books, reading books and listening to music. Like, my, like, musical library in my head is insane. Like, it's just crazy because that's all I did. Then high school came around, getting to the weed, getting to the drugs. I found high school, like, boring, I guess. Like, I was having fun actually making friends, right?
Okay.
So I was like, I don't really care about French class, whatever.
Yeah.
But I also knew that, like, in order to get to university, which is, like, obviously the goal, you had to get good grades in grade 11 and 12. So that's why I was like, well, I can just toot around in grade 9 and 10 and...
just have fun.
Yeah. Kind of a little too much fun, you know. Definitely were a couple incidents with the police, but nothing serious.
Was it, like, when you got into it, was it more for fun or was it more to fit in? Was it more to escape? Just feelings? Like, why?
I think it was all three of them, right?
Okay, yeah.
I think they're all related.
Yeah. I would say the same for me. Like, I think for me, I felt awkward and didn't fit in, and I wanted to be the life of the party.
Yeah.
And I actually like to have fun. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, all three combined, it's like the perfect storm of, like, the stuff I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. Right.
Anyway, so then after I left St. Mary's Catholic High School, I went to Westdale, and then my grades just, like, turned around. You know, I actually didn't get along with some of my teachers. Like, you know, I had tutors that were hired, and, like, they still gave me, like, crappy marks. So my parents are, let's try public school. It's like a, right away, it was like a turnaround. Like I graduated with honors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Gone to university. Gone to University of Guelph for international development.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's where you thought you were heading.
Yeah, because I did a trip when I was 18, and I went to Costa Rica by myself to work in the rainforest, and then I worked on the beach with sea turtles, and okay. I just loved building things, helping restore things, meeting new people and different cultures, and I was like, I want to do this for, like, the rest of my life, because I just, you know, when you stay in Canada, when you stay in one place, you're so limited to the world, mm-hmm. and people get so mad about the silliest things when you see other people all around the world, and, like, they're so happy with what we perceive as nothing, but they are just extraordinarily happy with simple things. And that's kind of the way that I want to live my life.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I can help people and actually enjoy my life at the same time. And because I knew that I was always like a chill person, right? Like I didn't ever sweat the small stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Even prison, so, which we'll get to. But yeah, so I took that trip and that was kind of like the eye-opening trip that was like led me to apply for international development. I mean, also because my math wasn't good enough to get into business school and right. my chemistry wasn't good enough to get into nutrition because I always loved food and I always loved business.
Okay, so that was already there. Okay.
But now I work in all three worlds.
Yeah,
you know?
Amazing how that can happen.
Yeah.
So you meet some. How does this where you end up going down to on a trip?
Yeah.
That literally changed the trajectory in the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, so high school, you know, there was the drinking, the drugs. Because I was able to graduate with honors, I don't see it as anything being too too problematic, just kind of maybe a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
But after I graduated university and came back, my parents got a divorce and it was really hard. And, you know, it's just kind of like that life that you thought was supposed to be a certain way, it wasn't. And, you know, there's a lot of tears, a lot of pain, which is, I know it's very common, but it's like, if you go, and it doesn't matter like what you go through, if it's hard for you, you should be allowed to grieve. And I was like at this age where some people were like, oh, you shouldn't be sad about this, you know, because you're like 23.
So sad.
And I was like, okay, so I guess I'm not going to be sad. So then I turned to substance abuse, you know.
So like, you're sad and you're like, I can't like show it. So I'm just going to go inward.
Yeah. It's like my alcohol and cocaine were Botox for the soul, you know, it just kept me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on this platform.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
I'm not going to curse. I know that.
So you turned inward with like substance abuse and things just to kind of numb the pain of it.
And it was very easy to hide. I mean, like I still had, at the time when I came back from, so I did an internship in Indonesia, came back and worked all these corporate jobs and marketing jobs. And people were like, you're really good at storytelling. So why don't you start your own company? Because I was starting to notice these entrepreneurial traits that I had. So I started this company. And so it was very easy to hide, to be honest. It's not like I was crumbling away, not doing the things that I was supposed to do. I did all the things that I was supposed to do. I was still getting clients and everything. So on the outside, it was probably fine. But
I wonder how many of us are like that. Probably a lot. Like on the outside, we look great. We're fronting all like, look at me. I'm good. I've got it together. I'm strong. I'm capable. But inside, it's like we're dying and just lonely, sad.
And I was just waiting. I was honestly just waiting for something to happen. Like then I met someone through my work who was sober and we became quite close. Like, and it wasn't like a physical relationship, but it was definitely a close emotional one.
Yeah.
For sure. And over the next 8 months, like we became really close, but then he was like a client of mine and then he started to like owe me money. But I just kind of ignored it because I really appreciate all the stuff that he was doing for me to help my well-being.
Yeah.
So he invited me on this trip to like, you know, I was like, oh my God, a first sober trip in like so long because I hadn't been on like a sober vacation. I don't even know.
Yeah.
And then we go down to this St. Lucia and he tells me that third day in, his demeanor completely changed. Tells me that we're there to work. And did I really just think this is all fun and games?
And you did though, right?
Yeah.
You really did. You were just like, yeah, I thought I could trust you. We're hanging out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he makes me get in the car. We go to this house. It looks like a bed and breakfast. It wasn't scary at all. That's why I wasn't scared. It just looked like a house.
Yeah.
And the grandma came out. So I still really wasn't scared.
Right.
And she's like, thank you so much for doing this. We go inside and that's when we see all the drugs. So it's this huge like bed and breakfast front too, but that's where they're stored. Yeah.
So
there was no rabid dogs. Like, you know, you think of these scenes in movies and
yeah.
It's Yeah, you know, there's like some big burly guys in a chair with a big shotgun and jewels.
And yeah, yeah. And he's sitting back like like on kind of a throne chair and he's like, hey.
Yeah.
Okay. Not like that.
Shooting people like that. Bah, yeah, yeah. This guy, you know, yeah. Like, there's it's not like that. There's no guns. I didn't see a single gun.
Wow.
But that's when I found out that when he booked the tickets, he sent this information to these people saying that we were bringing drugs back to help settle a debt that he had.
And bringing it back to Canada.
Yeah.
Are you getting it now? Like when you're walking in and realizing it, like, are you like, I'm in trouble? Oh,
yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to go home. But then they're like, don't try to tell anyone. Everyone here is in on it. So they scared me away from trying to do anything about it. So I was just like, okay, the safest way out is just trying to do my best because I don't know this world. I just know that it's dangerous.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to like, even at the airport, I'm not going to like out myself because these aren't my drugs.
Right.
So if I am personally responsible for losing these drugs, it's really not going
to
be good.
Right. So did you realize when they said you're going to bring them back that you actually were going to have to put them on yourself and bring them back?
Yeah. They made me like a special drug smuggling outfit too. It was like,
come on.
Yeah. That she took my measurements on the Wednesday. So this is the middle of the week that we went to that house. And the Friday, like they picked us back up at the hotel and took us to this house where I was like then suited up with this custom outfit.
Come on, yeah. To put all the drugs on.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're putting drugs in your suitcase. You're actually wearing them back.
Yeah.
How are you feeling at this point, Emily? Like, are you like, this is surreal. This is a dream. This can't be happening. Or are you like, I got to be like really smart, really sharp so that I don't like get killed or something happens.
Yeah.
Like,
I just wanted to go home.
Okay.
That was it. Yeah.
So they strap on the drugs and what happens?
And well, I put it on, and then we get on the airplane. He has it on him too. And then we got on the plane. We walked through the metal detector. There's no metal. And we got on the plane. It's like the longest and shortest plane ride of my life.
Mm-hmm. And what are you thinking on the plane?
Nothing.
Just I wasn't like thinking anything. Blank.
Yeah, I was just happy to be going home.
Mm-hmm. Like you weren't trapped there, and
yeah,
for some other reason.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And then we land and we have to go, you know, to the first guard and you tell them how long you've been away for.
Yeah. And this is Pearson, for those that are listening, like, from other countries. This is, like, Pearson International Airport, Terminal 1, yeah. Canada, Toronto, Canada.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you go through the first checkpoint and then they give you a little piece of paper. They scribble the number on. This is, like, 10 years ago, so it was still scribbled on. It wasn't computerized.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that. And they would go, they'd write, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just a number. It wasn't, like, an X.
No, it was a number.
Mark. Yeah, yep. And so you go to the second one, and then that's when they tell us that we have to go write. And now you can tell, like, he's freaking out. Because throughout those last 2 days that we were at the resort, he was, like, trying to get me excited about it. He's like, I've done this before, don't worry, blah, blah. And I was like, I hate you. I hate you so much.
Yeah.
Because, like, all I'd done on my travels was do good things and volunteered. Like, and so it was just like a complete abuse of my passport. And, you know, that was my favorite thing to do. So it was just like the disappointment and the betrayal. It just made me sad. I wasn't really mad. I was just very sad.
Yeah.
So.
Me too.
And
so sad. So he got caught too. Like, it was both of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
So I bet hearing turn right, you were like.
I was like, I wasn't shocked. I felt like a sense of relief at the time. I mean, I didn't know it was going to happen like a couple of years down the road.
Right.
But like, I just really just felt a sense of relief because I know that I'd do my best to not do anything and not get us caught. But something else caught us. So it wasn't me giving up the drug, but it was something else.
Okay.
That set it off. So I knew that at that point it was not my fault, so I couldn't be blamed for it.
Okay.
And then they separated us, and they asked us, they separated us so we couldn't hear what each other was saying.
Yeah, they would do that.
Which is good, because I was just like, I didn't even want to look at him, really. I was like, you know.
Yeah. How much drugs were on your body?
2 kilograms of cocaine. And he also had 2. Which, what I learned, is actually a small amount. It's a small amount.
Yeah, it just sounds, yeah.
It's okay. A small amount compared to, like, the amount that actually gets smuggled. So we were probably like a distraction or a decoy
for somebody else.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh. Hi, I'm Addison Espilla, one of the content producers here at See Hear Love. I just wanted to take a moment to invite you to join our community called the See Hear Lovelies. Here's how. Number one, sign up to our weekly newsletter. Every week, you'll get a personal note from Melinda with links to our shows, blogs, and resources, as well as inspirational content and a short devotional. You'll also be the first to know about upcoming events and giveaways. QR code is in the show description or sign up through our website at seeherlove.com and look for the newsletter icon. Number two, join us in studio and be part of our studio audience. Take a behind-the-scenes tour in our master control room, editing suites, and studio. You'll meet Melinda and the See Hear Love co-hosts and guests. Email us at seeherlove@crossroads.ca for more info. And finally, number three, become a monthly partner. $25 or $50 a month will help us share our brave themes and conversations on television, here on podcast, YouTube, video streaming, and on our social media platforms. We can't do See Hear Love without donations and sponsorships, so please go to www.seeherlove.com/donate and give your one-time or monthly donation today. Become a See Hear Lovely and join our See Hear Love community of belonging, vulnerable and brave conversations. We are here for you.
So you're separated. Used. Yeah, used, betrayed, like all the words. So you're separated and you... Are you now thinking, do I tell the truth? Do I lie? Like, what happened?
I knew that
to
I was
going to
tell the truth. Okay, I was going to lie to a federal agent because everything that he had told me basically at this point was a lie.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to tell the truth.
Okay.
And so I wasn't like, I didn't blame it on him. I wasn't like he did. I just, when they asked me if I had anything on me, if I wanted to declare anything because they're going to do a physical search, they actually had to ask me twice because I stared at the floor for so long. And then wow. I looked him right in the eye and I said, yes. So.
So was there a relief, like, I'm telling the truth,
yes.
But also behind it, like, what does this mean for me now?
Yeah, I just felt relieved. I was like, okay, when can I go home? Like,
so you're standing there in front of the guard, and you've told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? Can you see what's happening with your friend, or should I even call him a
Once
friend?
Once they arrest okay. me, then...
They arrested you on the spot?
Yep. They said, okay, Miss O'Brien, you're under arrest. I said, okay, figured that was coming.
Okay, and then he gets arrested.
And he gets arrested, yes.
So what happens? Like, I for someone like for a lot of us, it's like we don't even know what's the process.
They put me in a cell, like a holding cell, and then that's when they take the drugs and test them to determine what it is. And it's cocaine. Okay, is this a Schedule Two? I don't know. There's like some terminology for it, but
okay.
And the amount that I had, obviously, is it's a high amount. Like it's for trafficking yeah. purposes, obviously.
Right.
And yeah, so that's when I find out, like, I have to go to jail over the weekend and I'm not getting out unless someone bails me out. But the only person that can bail me out has to be someone that I'm going to live with. It's not just like call your friend and they come and pick you up and then you're good. This is like wow. an indictable. So everything.
Now, does your parents know anything at this point or no? You couldn't have called them.
The jail called them.
The jail called them? You didn't even call them?
No, I couldn't.
So they get a call, your parents, from the jail.
Yeah.
And they just thought you were on a trip? Do they even know you were on the trip?
Yep.
Okay.
Knew.
But now they're getting a call from a jail.
Yeah. I'm saying that my bail hearing is going to be on the Monday. And, they're not, my parents aren't together at this point. So,
right.
Yeah, they came together for me, though. And
wow.
They saw me being literally walked out in shackles, like hands into shackled. Like I was this like barbaric creature. And I think they were just glad that I was okay. They're so worried.
Yeah. Now is it the realization like more and more for you going, oh my goodness, what my life, like what's going through your
it
head
didn't really
through
hit
this?
Me then it didn't hit okay. like it didn't hit anything until I was on house arrest and I kind of learned how massive this mountain was going to be to climb.
Okay.
I was very naive. I didn't read the criminal code. I didn't know what was gonna happen. I just thought I could just maybe volunteer some volunteering
and just get
and explain what happened and
like you didn't know. And so who bails you out to live with, like where did
my
you
mom go? And my dad.
Okay,
so they're both my sureties. They live separately so I can stay with one of them. I kind of went back and forth to different houses and then
okay.
also two of my aunts were
okay,
so my parents travel a lot, so
yeah. So how
like we're busy.
Yeah. So what was your parents' response when you finally were able to talk to them after all of like when it this
well,
went
like, what
down.
Happened? Who are these people? I honestly can't really remember the first conversation we had. I know that I just started crying.
Oh, Yeah.
I think that's when it hit me, for sure.
Mom and dad started crying?
I don't know if my dad did. I think my mom probably did, but the lawyers were there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So you're under house arrest. What happened to the guy?
He also got arrested.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're under house arrest, and then what does that mean? Like, what's the process for then you go to...
House arrest, I have to have handwritten notes anywhere that I go that has to be approved by my mom. So I forgot how, like, did I have to go with her? Like, I was allowed to go places, but okay. I had to have a handwritten note.
Wow.
Or something.
And how long was
this? Or I think it was...
A handwritten note to anywhere you go?
Yeah, I think it was only two things that I was allowed to go to. So Emily's going to work today. Emily's permission to do this. Like, okay. I couldn't just like, oh, Emily's like going to the bar. Like,
yeah, yeah,
that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So they had to be abreast of all that. And yeah, so obviously very challenging time for everyone, you know, because we've never been in a situation like this before.
Right.
We didn't know how, like, why was it taking so long? Like,
so in this time you're waiting, are you waiting to go to prison?
Yeah. Well, we're waiting for the court case to like, for the court proceedings to continue.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, cause we didn't know how long it was supposed to take. So it was just like meeting after meeting, and then it ended up being 2.5 years of these conditions. So,
okay. So that's for someone like me. I'm like, oh, you don't just go straight to prison.
No.
There's actually a process before
you have
to get to prison.
Determined guilty.
Guilty. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So 2.5 years, house arrest, written notes with mom, dad, aunts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a lot. And the anticipation of like, it's coming.
Like, yeah, and then finding out, right? I didn't know I was going to prison until, like, the second year in. Like, I was on bail for 2.5 years. I think I was within the first year was just a mess because no one knew what was happening. I was extremely depressed. I couldn't talk to anybody. I was locked in my house, drank a lot, like, it was a very, very dark period. But then I, like, spent a lot of time with my family and looking up, like, photo albums. And, you know, I was this bright young kid, and I was a happy kid, and I wasn't going to let this thing take that from me.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
Yeah.
And not everybody goes into it with that mindset. Most people would be like, could either go into a deep depression and denial, and it's not my fault.
I was there.
You were there?
Okay,
you were
there too? I was there, yeah, but okay. I was like, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to roll around in the dirt to realize that you need a bath.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know what? It's really amazing, too, that your family was with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they were pissed. They were angry.
Yeah.
They were definitely angry. You know, I changed their entire life. You know, I stressed there was like a lot of financial stress. If Emily screws up, we lose our bail bonds, right? So there was that pressure.
For sure.
You know, a lot of tension with my father for, you know, any of course there's going to be tension.
Yeah.
So me being my stubborn self and, you know, because no one knew.
Yeah.
So we're just fighting about things that we both didn't know the answer to. Right?
That's hard. And you couldn't say anything. You couldn't talk about it with anybody. So you couldn't talk, like, phone a friend and be like, hey, I just need to process stuff with you.
No, and I was living in extreme paranoia because I didn't know if someone was coming after me also. So that was not good.
So the isolation, fear, tension with family, that's, I mean, clearly your mental health. How was that going?
It was bad for the first year. But then I was like, I couldn't live in that emotional anguish anymore. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
So I was like, pull yourself out of it.
Yeah.
It's like a reckoning.
Yeah. So you get sort of done the 2.5 years,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens when they're like, you are guilty?
So I knew that I was going to jail about 7 or 8 months before. So I had like a bunch of time to prep. And like, I went to school. So I was like, I kind of reframed it as going to university, going to rehab, taking a sabbatical, all of that, going to business school because legal fees were expensive. So I was like, I hate losing money. So I was like, this money's going to go towards something good. So I was actually ready for prison way before. And that's like kind of what gave me the confidence that I knew it was going to be something good.
Okay.
I wasn't afraid. I knew that if this happened to me, it could have happened to other people just like me. And I just felt so misunderstood. And I'm sure that's exactly who I was going to meet in there.
Yeah. So what happens? Because a lot of us have not experienced prison.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, and then what was it like? Like, it's so I can't even imagine. I'm looking at you going, I can't believe you were in prison. Like, it's not like you were going away for like a weekend. This is like for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get processed, strip searched. They give you a bunch of stuff. I was housed at Grand Valley Institution for Women in Kitchener. So it was medium security. So I lived with 10 other women, all convicted of various offenses, including murder. But, you know, they analyze behavior to see who's actually violent or not. Okay. So the violent people are still kept in maximum because there are people that have committed violent crimes, but once they spend enough time in max and they're deemed not violent, then they can come down to medium. So I met a lot of people and learned a lot of stories, learned that we all had, you know, something in common. And that was, you know, our lives were in a really dark place before this happened. And, you know, but I also believe that justice is a part of wrongdoing. And popcorn was a popular prison snack. We all shared it.
That's interesting to me because I think when we think prison, it's like, no, you're like you see it in the movies where you go into your cell, they feed you the food, and then you go back to your cell. But that doesn't sound like this your experience because you're making food, right?
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I didn't know about that. I think that was really a new thing that I learned.
Yeah, because I obviously wasn't violent, so and I wasn't. I didn't have a history.
Yeah.
So they're not going to treat me as someone that.
So you're saying you're with 10 women. So I'm visualizing this so everybody else can. So you're with 10 women. You're in a, is it like a pod? Is it like a?
It's like a, I do not want to say cottage. Because you're going to be like, a cottage.
Yeah, yeah.
Living in a cottage.
No. But it's like a.
Is it like a shanty house? Like
okay, so a house. Okay, so you're living there with 10 women.
Yeah.
And you all have to make food.
Yeah.
And like kind of live together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so popcorn, like how did that all come about? Like it's, that's really cool too.
Popcorn was always one of my favorite foods because part of my substance use and misuse was actually like rooted in eating disorder.
Okay.
That I had when I was like in high school. And I didn't want that to reemerge when I was in prison because I knew it was going to be stressful and, you know, limited exercise. Although I actually ended up exercising a lot, but I wasn't going to let that come back. And so I made it like top priority to make sure that I was making healthy stuff for myself and not just like binging or whatever.
Okay.
And so I'd put like different seasonings on popcorn because we'd had different spices.
Yeah.
I'd buy the kernels off the canteen.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the spices that we already had access to. And so just different recipes. And then people would also bring in their favorite recipes from home. And then people would make their favorite meals from home. And so we built this community.
That's amazing.
Of just like growing and sharing stories, sharing regrets, you know, things that we missed, things that we wish we'd done differently. But also the number one thing was, you know, finding employment and how, you know, even though you're done your time, you still, the world still condemns you.
Yeah.
And like, how does that make sense?
How long were you in?
I did a year. I got 4 years, but I was in for a year before I was eligible for parole. I lived in a halfway house for 6 months. It's called day parole. And then the rest I finished on full parole, which is in the community. You're still highly monitored. You're, it's not a free for all. You're still very much tied to Corrections Canada in a number of different ways. So
So in that year, you're making popcorn with these women. And are you, at that point, are you thinking anything? Are you just like, this is really great. It's something I can eat. It's fun that everybody's contributing to it.
Mm-hmm.
When did it start going, oh, this could be maybe something I could bring when I'm back?
Yeah.
Like, I feel the connection. I think it's so interesting.
It was honestly Super Bowl. And it was the Super Bowl game. And we were just all talking about jobs and stuff. And I was like, we were eating popcorn. And I was like, you know, I'm going to start a popcorn company.
You just said that while you were in prison.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to start a popcorn company and employ us and prove that we are worthy of redemption, second chances, and we are great people, and we can bring a lot of good to the world.
Wow.
That's literally how it started.
Yeah. Just like that.
Yeah.
Watching Super Bowl, eating, and that's what comes to you.
Yeah.
That has to, Emily, have come, like, because you talked about, like, when you were younger, that you had, like, entrepreneurial business, like, it was in you, so.
I was always a little hustler, yes.
Yeah, but it's amazing that in a place where it's not the greatest, you're coming up with, hey, this would be a really cool business opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So what social opportunity.
Yeah, and what did the women around you think? Were they just like, yeah, or are they like, yeah?
I mean, everyone had their own opinion about it, but no one was mean about it. You know, some people were like, yeah, okay, go for it. Some people were like, okay, nice try. Like, no one was like berating me for it. Absolutely not. Like, you know, so.
And you were really, were you serious or were you just saying it?
I knew that I had something. I felt like, I just felt this like feeling that I was like, that is the Emily energy.
It could have been like, and it could have been like a divine, like, in you.
Pop.
Yeah.
But that's when I knew. And like, I also studied, I read a lot of books when I was in prison and I knew that social enterprises were growing really fast and they've become very prominent like in the economy now.
Right.
It's not just about having corporations. So I was like, this can be a social enterprise where, you know, I'm hiring the formerly incarcerated and addressing a social issue. And so I started reading books all about that and wrote letters to the authors of those books. I started building a mentor network, played around with logos, and then my now current business partner would send me in like food trends and
come on.
Yeah. So we communicated it like with, you know, very limited means of communication.
But still were able to do it.
Yeah.
So when you get out of prison, this was like you're basically full force. Like you're ready to go mm-hmm. and launch this pretty
much? Well, I had to get a regular job at the gym. Like I had to get, because every parole officer wants you to have a job with a paycheck, which is fair. They want to manage your finances to make sure that, you know, you're not going to commit a crime to get more finances.
Yeah.
And so I got a job at the gym and then I told the gym my story. It's in West Hamilton over there. They gave me a job on the spot and I told them like that I came out of prison and I needed a second chance. And they gave me the job on the spot. And then they invited me to, like, participate in their open houses. So I would bring popcorn to the open houses. I ran into my old teachers at the gym. They're like, why don't you come talk in our class? And so the storytelling really began there.
Which is, again, something you said that you were a storyteller.
Yeah.
So all the pieces of who you are, like, literally come through in prison and you see yourself now, like, living it all out.
Yeah.
The storytelling, the business, the entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, it's really cool.
I knew that I was going to do it. I had a little notebook, and it was actually from the chaplaincy in prison.
Yeah.
And I still have that notebook. I called it Pop Thoughts, and, like, of all the things that I wanted to do. And so, I've done pretty much every single one of them, except one of them was called, I want to have pop stock. So, like, once I build the company bigger, I want employees to have their own stock in the company.
It's amazing. So, Comeback Snack. So, let's talk about this, because I really want, because there's some things that I just want to make sure that people hear.
Yeah.
Because I want to know, like, about it, but also some of the new initiative, the initiatives you're doing within it.
Yeah.
Which are really cool. So yeah. Comeback Snacks, that makes sense. Comeback Second Chances, right?
Popcorn's so good as criminal.
Yeah, it's amazing. So did you come up with that?
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Take all the negative derogatory terms and flip it on its head.
Yeah, amazing. So you're like, okay, we're going to do Comeback Snacks. We're going to make this popcorn. And who do you hire? How does it all come about as far as the business?
So the first people you have to hire is yourself.
Yeah.
Because we weren't... Like, whenever you build, you don't make your first hire for, like, so long. So we had our first hire within six months. He was someone named Chris. He was from Kingston. He'd been in prison in Kingston. Second one, her name was Christine. She had been in and out of jails in Hamilton. And then they'd help out. Third one was Miranda, who I was actually in prison with.
Okay.
And so we were popping popcorn in, like, these kitchens. And it was great. So I was like, okay, these are all great staff. I still speak so highly of them.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone on and moved on to different things since, like, 6 years ago, but... Over the years, like, I've had so many people that come in and, you know, use it as a stepping stone to gain employment. Amazing. And some people have been there since day one. So
how hard is it for people who are incarcerated to get jobs when they come out?
It's hard to, like, I think even the job market in general is tough.
Yeah.
And the nature of applying for jobs is tough because a lot of it is electronic. I'm still a firm believer, and you go and find out who that person is, and you reach out to them directly.
Yes. I don't like this whole, like, go online, like, our son, you know, is looking for a job, and it's all, like, go online. But it's like, you never know who he is.
Yeah.
Like, what if he might not have the skill you want, but actually because that happened to me.
Yeah.
I had no skill in any job I did, but I would go out, I'd go in the face of a manager, and
exactly.
I'd be, like, demanding the job. Like, look at me, I will work so hard for you.
Yeah.
So they're like, all right. But my resume would not translate at all online.
I know,
back then.
Denied.
Yeah, they'd be like, yeah, you have no
Thank
experience
you for
in this.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't like it, but so I love that. So it's hard for people, obviously, that are incarcerated to get jobs.
With a record. Yeah.
So so you're hiring and giving these people opportunity, which is amazing.
And then, like, writing them employment letters, too, so they can, you know, get housing and stuff like that.
That's amazing. So what are some of the initiatives that you're doing?
Well, I gotta tell you, the Comeback Catalyst, we just launched it. We got funding for it. So when I was in prison, I saw so many people with all these entrepreneurial traits.
Okay.
You know, you can, like, repurpose your hustle. Like, anything that's illegal that people make money off of, drug dealing, fraud, whatever. You can repurpose that hustle into something legal. And so I really saw all this. And there was a whole prison economy. People were trading and bartering with stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was like, maybe I can start, like, an incubator to help people coming out of prison, like, start their hustle. And then work for, like, have their own business. That way, when they're navigating the work, like, the difficulties in the workforce with the record, you can just start your own and create income for yourself. And so we have 25. So it's called the Comeback Catalyst.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and it's for anyone with a criminal record. So we're gonna have 120 students by the end
of
this year.
Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you ever, Emily, dream, like, even before you went to prison, like, this is where you'd be? Like thinking now, going, wow, I can't believe this is where I am. This is who I am becoming. This is what I'm doing. Like, are there days where you're just like, whoa, wow?
Honestly, I'm still pretty, like, humble about it. I just, like, I feel like every day is, like, the first day that I'm starting it, you know? And I think that's a good mentality to have. You know, you're just the first day, it's like you're always like starting over, doing something good and trying to help others at the same time.
And what do you say to people? Because it's like, if you didn't go to prison, you may not be doing what you were doing.
Exactly.
So like,
it's like divine intervention.
Yeah, divine intervention. Talk to people about that, because a lot of people are living stuck in regret, bad decisions that have defined them. They can't get out of it.
Or they stay in the victim mentality.
Yeah, so they stay in the victim mentality. Exactly. And I always say this to my girlfriends. I have like girlfriends all the time that have the same kind of issue and they've been victimized or whatever it's been.
Yeah.
And you can see the different lives by one making a decision and one not.
Mm-hmm.
And their lives go completely different. And so I believe in choosing and doing the hard thing. But talk to me about that for the woman that's like really struggling, like still staying in victim mentality, still staying in like my past mm-hmm. is defining her mm-hmm. and she just cannot move.
It can define you in a good way though. Like mine, I use mine to propel me in a good way.
Yeah.
So
what would you say to them? Like if they're literally like, that's so inspiring, but I can't do it.
Just start with a baby step. Start with one step, but you don't have to do everything in one day. You know, start with these like micro achievements, like micro actions, because then that'll turn into a mountain.
Right. So don't overwhelm yourself. Just make little steps.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love like your story. There's so many layers to it, but I think it's so redemptive. The comeback, the second chances is what everybody needs, because we all have messed up. We've all done something stupid or we've all regretted something. And it's like your story is so hopeful that it's like, no, actually everybody deserves a second chance, can have a second chance. You can turn something that was like awful and hard and to something that's redemptive and amazing that can impact and people, all kinds of people. And I think that's so incredible. It really is. I'm like really proud of you. I think like, because again, sometimes you don't hear these stories. You hear kind of like the opposite of like this happened and they're, you know, when people are stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the...
I refuse. I'm too busy to be stuck.
Yeah. So what's your hope for the future for you and Comeback Snacks?
Honestly, it's sometimes when you just hope for the future, you end up wishing your life away. And if you're just always thinking about the future, you don't enjoy the now as much. So I'm just like building things as they come along and loving it, because I'm not... One time my dad said, Emily, like, never wish your life away. And so I'm just enjoying every single day as it comes.
So good. And your popcorn's amazing. Where can we find it right
now? Farm Boy.
Yep.
Indigo.
Mm-hmm.
Winners, HomeSense, Marshalls, and Sobeys, Select Sobeys.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Scotiabank Arena, Rogers Center. And online. You can get it, like, right. And well.ca.
Okay, on well.ca.
Yeah.
Are there times when you're walking through and you see it and you're like, oh my goodness, that's my product?
Yeah, I'm like, hell. Heck yeah.
No, but it's like that. It's like, but it's like that. It's like, I'd be the same. Like, I can't believe that's what I've accomplished.
Yeah. No, it's cool, because sometimes people send me pictures of it like all across Canada and I'm like, this is great.
Amazing. Well, Emily, thank you so much.
Like, thanks for having
me. I love
me.
This story. I think there's even more we could talk about, like entrepreneurship and business, because there's so much of that. But I think I really want to get at the heart of like this sort of redemption, second chance.
Yeah.
And here you are, and like here, like you're actually here telling the story. And so thank you for continuing to be a storyteller. And thank you for delicious popcorn. And thank you so much for being here.
So welcome.
And to you, our listeners and viewers, thank you for joining us. If you want to know more about Emily, they can find you where?
Instagram is the best, or the website at Comeback Snacks, or www.comebacksnacks.com.
Woo!
Or comebackcatalyst.ca.
And then we should just do a jingle. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on See, Hear, Love. And always know that you are seen, heard, and deeply loved by God. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining See, Hear, Love with Melinda Esterbrooks. This podcast is a Crossroads Media production. We're grateful for our sponsors, Tyndale University and the Canadian Bible Society. Until next time,
always remember, you are seen, you are heard, and you are loved by God.